All right, up next we have Mr. John Erickson, who we see over here in the white lab coat. He's doing a talk on elliptical curve cryptography.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And
so anyway, everybody give a big round of applause for John.
Is this? All right. Where am I going to start? Do you guys all know basic public key cryptography? Okay, I'll start from the beginning, I guess. All right. Let's say you have data, or a piece of data, let's call it X, right? Normally with any type of symmetric key algorithm, E is the encrypt function. So if you encrypt with key K, data D, or let's make it X. All right. I'm going to need more paper in a little bit here, but all right, this is a symmetric algorithm. That's the way it works. If you encrypt with key K, data X, you get C. And then if you decrypt with key K, with data C, you get X. So then with public key crypto, it goes, there are actually two keys. Like that. And normally your key one is a public key and your key two is a private key. So rock. And that's how RSA works. And another little thing. Do you guys all know modular arithmetic? Just basically it's like clock arithmetic. 10 o'clock plus 3 hours gives you 1 o'clock. So that's modulus 12. All right. If you have any questions, just stop me. Okay, so elliptical curves. Let's say an elliptical curve looks something like that, because it does. And with elliptical curves, there are a couple things you can do. There's point addition. And the way points get added on an elliptical curve is, let's see, what are some good points? Let's say this is point P, and this point Q. If you want P plus Q to equal R, you draw a line through P and Q, and you'll get negative R, and then that's your point R. That's the geometric way to explain that. And then there's also what's called point doubling. Like, all right, here's P plus Q, right? If you want P plus P equals R, let's say, we can use this P. Let's say we're using this P. You draw a tangent line and do the same thing. All right, everyone follow that so far? Okay, and this can also be written 2P equals R. And, Oh, I can show you the way it's defined. All right, let's say you start off with just a single point. This is why that negative stuff happens. With consider a group made up of all the points on this elliptical curve plus a point at infinity, which we'll call O infinity. So that's it right there. So P plus that point at infinity equals P. And then the inverse of that is... And then identity, right? So that means that P equals X, Y, and negative P equals X minus negative Y, which is why you flip it like that. Yoink. And then... maybe I'll come into this later. It's mathematically how all that stuff's derived. It's not really important. It's just technical. This right there is really the basis of everything. This is called point multiplication or scalar multiplication. P times a scalar 2 is actually P plus P. So let's say you do like, well, you can do X P equals R. So let's say your scalar is 15p equals r. That is actually p plus p plus p plus p plus p plus p. And all the way on 15 times. And normally that would take 14 operations. But you can speed it up a little bit because... Come here. Fifteen is 1111 in binary, right? So that means 15p also equals p plus this quantity doubled. Yeah, that's equivalent. And that's six operations there. And you can actually speed it up a little bit more if you do a little bit more tricky stuff. And that's five operations because 15 is 16 minus 1. So just, yeah, binary representation. All right, any questions so far about that? Anyone? Yeah, shoot. Oh, right. Okay, normally it's, this will change a little bit, but the default is... That's an elliptical curve, A and B being scalars. And it's got to be smooth. There's got to be no repeated factors. And, yeah, a bunch of crap like that. Yeah, shoot.
Your P, what is that defined? I mean, I said the point, but how is that quantity represented in your graph? Like, where?
Which?
Well, obviously, a point in that equation, geometry, has an x-y component.
Right. What were you asking? The point P. This doesn't quite relate to cryptography yet. This is just. Oh, right, this is just a scalar. That's why it's called scalar multiplication. Like this 15p is actually equal to 15 plus 15 all the way on to 15.
Right, but you're 2 times 2 times 2 times p.
Oh.
You're, I mean, those scalars multiply by each other.
Yeah, you can't they're supposed to have the things. They're all scalar multiplications, and order operations go like this, so you can't scalaritize those. Or you can, but you'd break it down again anyways when you actually do it. So if you were to multiply those out, in order to reduce the operations you need to do, you need to break it down once again. Okay. Anything else? Anyone? Shoot.
Why would you factor 15 like that instead of, say, 3 times 5 or whatever? You know,
Because you can do, you know how to do this operation fast, and you know how to do this operation fast, but you don't know how to do, like if you broke it down into 3 and 5, 3P is actually equal to 2P plus P, and 5P is actually equal to 2P plus 2P plus P. So it's better to break it down in binary. It's the same reason we don't use, like, ADLs-based computers. It's binary-based. You know, binary works out when you have 2P and P plus Q. If there was a third one, we'd use trinary. Right?
Oh, actually, I can go into that if you like. Maybe. Is it good? All right. This is the math part.
Now, Dr. Neil Kobolitz, the guy who helped make a lot of this stuff, he uses crazy naming conventions. He defines this line here. Let's define that as L. And it's y equals alpha x. Oh, y equals alpha x plus beta. So you can see this alpha right here is just a slope of P and Q. So, slope of that line, that's easy. And then, I'll get into that all other stuff later, but that's how you, that's how the plus operation is mathematically done. And then, if you want to do, here's a little addendum. And that's just a little bit of, that's a little bit of calculus there to get the tangent line for if you only have one point. So that's how you get the slope if there's only one point. And then you just plug and chug there.
Does a TI-85 do that?
Yeah.
All right.
Oh. Okay, how does this all relate to crypto? With cryptography, we can't use real numbers. With computers, we can't really use real numbers because they're really hard to represent. And especially when it comes to cryptography, when everything is very discrete and finite. So what I was talking about before, that clock arithmetic, you can also think of any type of arithmetic modulus 12, like clock arithmetic, you can think of that as a prime finite field of 12, because a field is like a ring, but you can go backwards. So in like a prime finite field of 12, 10 o'clock plus 3 is 1, and same goes backwards, and multiplication and division, they're all like that. So do you guys understand that? Oh, okay, you're right. It's just a finite field. Normally use primes because it's... What? Really? Well, then a clock isn't a very good example. We'll use a baker's clock. And say the clock goes to 13. when you go past it, it loops around. So whenever you see, like, some math stuff there, mod 13, you do all your math stuff, and then you do a modulus 13, and that's right, primitive field. And then you can do the same thing with polynomials, which makes it easier for what we're doing. Actually, I think it's a Galileo's field that works like this. And okay, let's say we wanted to find polynomials, and we're only going to use 1 and 0. So we've got a polynomial like x squared plus 1 and a polynomial like x to the 4th plus x plus 1. Okay. You can represent this as in binary based on the powers of each coefficient. No, not coefficient. Fucking this thing. So, think of it like this. The way we represent x squared plus 1 is 1 is actually equal to 1x plus 0. And this 4, 1 can be represented. Do you guys all see that? Anyone not see how that works? Okay, and then does everyone know what an XOR operation is? Anyways, for anyone who didn't nod their heads just because they didn't want to mention it, I'll write it up here. Right. That's how bits XOR. And funny thing is here, since we're doing everything mod 2, basically, if we do in a system that's modulus 2, 1 plus 0 equals 1, 0 plus 1 equals 1, 0 plus 0 equals 0, and 1 plus 1 equals 2, but since it's mod 2, that actually equals 0. So what we have is an XOR operation. So if we want to add these two polynomials together, all we have to do is XOR the bits. And that gives us yeah, just like that. And as you can see, this makes it very fast for any type of operation on a computer because you don't have to worry about carrier propagation. Yeah.
For mod 13, like you said, all right, those are like on the clock. Uh-huh. Like, so you can never have a number greater than 13.
Right.
So you can never be able to have more than two like this?
Well, actually, because it's mod 2, like I was saying, it's different because it's a polynomial. Basically, the mod 2 just says you'll always have either 0 or 1 for a bit.
I know, but is there any different numbers systems like hex or like
right, they...
Is it the same thing? Is it different? Because, I mean, for a clock,
a number
is bigger than
13. Right, well, hex and octal, they're just different representations for binary. Okay. Right. Right. Well, for the baker's dozen clock. Right, more than 12. Oh, for a clock. Right. Right. Did I answer your question, or did I just confuse you? No, it's just like any number system. Like if you add more things, you can stack on bits all the way, right? And then let's say you want to multiply these two together. It's just a shift left logical. Multiply this by 4, shift it 4 over. This by 1, shift it 1 over. By 0, leave it. do the big, huge XOR and then take the remainder because it's mod. Like, okay, like this is mod 13, right? When you're doing it with polynomials in, it's actually called a Galois field, it's mod a irreducible polynomial. So I'm pretty sure x to the third plus 1 is irreducible. Yeah, so it basically looks like mod x, something like that. But these are almost always represented in binary, too. So if you see it anywhere, it would be like that or something. All right. So how's this all make a crypto system? Like a prime number, what are its factors? There aren't really any. Whether it's itself and one. Irreducible polynomial means that you can't factor the polynomial to any other bits or any other pieces besides itself. Maybe it's x to the fourth then. All right. Let's call it fourth then. What's that? Yeah, just like a prime number. Okay, so it's x to the 4. I think that's right. If anyone wants to turn it out really quick. Yeah. Oh, okay, it's only... Okay, this is different than this. This is mod 13. This is... What's that? Well, no, it's... not really binary. Like, this number doesn't really represent 1, 2, 4, 5. This doesn't represent 5. This represents x squared plus 1. Basically, it's a way to use the binary registers to represent something besides binary numbers. You represent polynomials instead of numbers. So you could represent that as 5 if you, like... x was 2.
You have x to the 0, x to the so on.
Well, don't even think of it as x. Just like think of this as a different.
I'm just trying to help
him. Oh, okay. This is like a different variable thing. Like you're typecasting, I guess. Yeah.
I was going to suggest
explain the general extension. Yeah. Well, do you guys understand the basics of this though? Okay. Well, I'll come back to that if we have time. So, what this is all based on is, comes down to here, the scalar multiplication. It's hard to go backwards. It's called the elliptical curve discrete logarithm problem. And, yeah, for that 15p equals r, if you have P and you have R, it's really hard to get the number 15. So you can do it one way, but not the other. And this type of crypto is normally based on some sort of trapdoor function like that. So why is it hard? Well, I can't really prove that. You can't really prove that it's hard. If you could, you'd be proving that the class NP equals P, and or doesn't equal P, which would be pretty phenomenal. All modern crypto is based on hope, I guess. Like, no one can mathematically prove that it's hard to break a crypto system, but they're pretty sure.
So, prove that it's not extremely easy.
Right. They can prove it's not a trivial problem, but they can't prove that there is no shortcut. So, oh, and that's the other thing that I want to get into. This whole thing is based on this newer problem, elliptical curve cryptography. And that's what makes elliptical curve cryptography more secure. The fastest known algorithm to break ECC is like something like big O of square root of n, whereas for factoring, it's like big O of the natural log of the natural log of n plus something. So one's a polynomial and one's polynomial time. So that means that I think it's like a 124-bit RSA key would take just as long to crack as a 163-bit elliptical curve key. And that's only if it remains that this is the best known algorithm to best publicly known algorithm to break or solve that problem. If anything new comes along, it could crash all this stuff down. So that's why some people are a little wary still. But, where was I? Oh, I guess I could go into protocols. How much time do I have? Oh, all right. All right, well, all right, Diffie-Hellman. All right, we'll assume that there's someone named Alice and someone named Bob, and they both have their keys, key A and key B, respectively. Both Alice and Bob choose, what do I call it there, R, which is a random base point. And also ahead, they choose what curve they want to do it on. And so they choose the curve. So publicly known stuff is the curve, the type of math being used in it, whether it's optimal normal basis or the other one. And they pick a random base point. So then Bob takes his key, which is just a bit string, so it's a big number, think of it, and does a scalar multiplication with R. And Alice does the same with her key, right? Then they send that to each other, and so then they send that chunk to each other, and then they put their, they do a scalar multiplication with their key with whatever they got, and they both get the same thing, and they both get their secret point that they want to use to communicate with. So that's like a key exchange. Right. If you want to transmit data with this type of thing, what is it? IEEE P1363 is the specification. You use some sort of hash function, and each point is already expressed as a string of bits. Oh, go ahead, ask.
Are they using the same R?
Yeah.
How do they exchange R?
It's public information. They just choose one, they say, hey, here's R. Right, okay. So if you want to send data, you've got each point is string of bits, and you run that through some sort of hash algorithm like SHA-1 or whatever to get a big bit string. And then you also use a counter. They use a 32-bit counter, and you increment it till you get a long enough mask, and you XOR it with whatever message or data you're trying to transmit, and then send that. And then the receiving side takes that, and they get the point that you're trying to send and run it through the same mask, generate the same mask, XOR, and get the stuff back. So there's maybe I'll do it here. Just another protocol, LGAML. All right.
This one's a little bit weirder. All right. Alice and Bob, they both generate public points by multiplying their key by doing a scale multiplication of their key times their random base point. And then they send that to each other, PA and PB. Then where's a good place to do this? What was up here? Hey. All right, then Alice picks a secret point, PS for secret, and also generates a random number, Q. Then PR is scalar multiplication of Q times R, and then PH is Q times what B sent her plus that point. And then she sends this stuff to Bob, and then all Bob has to do is multiply his key times the PR she sends and subtract that quantity from PN. And it looks kind of weird because you don't really see how that works. But the way it works is... All right, if we remember that PB equals up here Bob's key times R, so that means Q times PB is actually this. And that also means... That means that if you substitute this with this right down here, we get PH equals PS plus that. And then if we substitute this in for up here, I wish that was easier to see, but if you substitute that back in for the top, really what you're doing is you're just subtracting same quantity, and you get the point that Alice picked, the secret point. So if Alice, you know, makes a mask for whatever file she's trying to send Bob with PS right here, she can send that data to him just like that. I'm going to need some more paper. So both these, though, are susceptible to man-in-the-middle attacks. Shoot.
This is kind of quick, but those are both for negotiating shared secrets.
Right.
Does electrical current cryptography offer any latitude for doing things like signal recognition, like RSA does?
Yeah, they do. I just didn't read about them. Hold on, let me think. Yeah, they do. I just can't remember how. But, okay, the one thing that different companies, notably Certicom, is the industry leader with elliptical curve cryptography. They snatched up Doc Neal, and they work with him. What's good about a system like this is when you're dealing with really large
numbers like RSA needs, you need a cryptocurrency processor, and that's normally what's in smart cards to do all those big math numbers, because it's hard to do that on an 8-bit processor. But this isn't so bad on a smart card. So Certicom, this is sound like a commercial here, but Certicom actually offers a smart card minus the cryptical processor, which makes it cheaper and, well, I wouldn't say faster, but it makes it cheaper so you can distribute the cards more. Oh.
But on a general microprocessor, it's the elliptical curve calculations are
significantly faster. Yeah, I'd say they are. Especially since you're dealing with smaller key sizes. But I'm pretty sure even if you had equivalent keys, it'd still be about the same. But, like I said, the fact that right now 1024-bit RSA keys equivalent to 163-bit ECC, you can use a smaller key a lot faster. I don't know. I never did any testing, so I don't know. Wish I did. This, you can do a man-in-the-middle attack pretty easy. So there's another protocol called Masayomura. Man-in-the-middle attack is where... Let's see if I do this right. Here's a server. Here's client. And let's go with just Diffie-Hellman. Yeah. Yeah, well, it'd have to be a hermaphroditic prostitute, Nick, because he's got to falsify himself to both sides. Or unless Alice gets down like that. What's that? All right. We got Alice and we've got Bob, who is a lesbian. And we've got Eve, who is our prostitute. Normally, if Bob the Butch Lesbian wants to hook up with Alice, Bob would send his right down there, his KB, and then he'd send back the chunk part, right? Hold on, let me write this all out. If Bob's talking to Alice and Alice is talking to Bob, they assume that their key pairs are right. With this type of thing, on this side, Eve looks like A to Bob, but she's using her own key pairs, and on this side, she looks like Bob. So through some type of network redirection or whatever, like DNS or ARP or something silly, all of Bob's communication go here, and Bob actually does a key negotiation with Eve, thinking that Eve is Alice, and... but using her own keys, so she knows what's up, and same here. And then she just sits in the middle and passes that information using, like, swapping the key pairs. I think I explained that all right. Any questions on that, or anyone want to clear it up any, if I didn't get that right?
No, man.
Oh, lesbian in the middle. Right, so what was I saying before that? Right. So, right. Multipass. That's what it's called. All right, this kind of takes... like this whole field crap, it's like it goes in a circle, so it's cyclical. That's the word. And so this kind of takes advantage of that. All right, assuming we're using curve n, right, and assuming that there is some e, that there, it's the greatest common divisor of e and the curve being 1, therefore there is some sort of inverse where d equals the inverse of that in that modulus crap. So I guess the simpler way to explain that is, let's say q equals EP and R equals Q. Then all right, if Q equals the scalar E times that point P, and R equals the opposite of that with Q, that means R equals P. So basically what that says is there's some scalar that exists where, okay, there are two pairs of scalars. There's E and D. And there's a pair such that if you go one way with one, you'll get the same thing as going back. Like, how's this work? Oh, right. Okay. Q equals the scalar E times P. Now, normally if you have Q, you can't get P back. But what this is saying is there's some D that exists that will get you P back. So assuming you have P right there, right? And you go around E times to get Q, it basically just says that there's a D like that that'll get you your P back. But it's not that simple, but there you can find that. Right. Everyone understand that? All right. So they both calculate their pairs of E and D, A's for Alice, B's for Bob, and Alice picks PS. Then Alice sends this point 1 by doing a scalar multiplication of the point she picked with her EA, and she sends that off to Bob. Then Bob takes that point, multiplies it by his EB, and gets a P2, sends that to A. Then A does it again, but this time with her D. And then there, Bob gets the point back by multiplying his DB by the point that Alice sends back. And there's a lot of communication here, but it thwarts man-in-the-middle attacks because at any point, any of the stuff that's sent, you can't really do anything with it. You see what I'm saying? It's like how do I explain this? Like, Alice does this operation, and then, so, say we both have a, two people have some sort of thing in the middle of them, and Alice does an operation, Bob does an operation, then Alice somehow removes her operation that she did in the first place. Oh, okay. Removes her operation that she did in the first place, leaving only Bob's operation done. And then Bob removes his operation, getting the original point back. So this is Alice doing her first operation. Then this is Bob adding his operation on top of that. Then here Alice subtracts it. So actually what Alice is sending back is... what P3 actually equals is the point that she picked times Bob's E, even though she never knew Bob's E, and it was never communicated, that's what she's sending to him. And then all he has to do is multiply that by his D to get it back.
This is the two-pad
lock. Yeah. Rar. Well, I think I'm running out of time. Anyone have any questions on this? Anything else? All right. Oh, shoot. Yeah. Let's see. Dr. Neil Koblitz has a graduate book called, or graduate text. It's called, like, Algebraic Aspects of Cryptography. And also, a man named Michael Rosing has did a book called Implementing Elliptical Curve Cryptography, and it's got a lot of source in there, which is really nice. Like, if you've never done, like, a big integer class before or anything like that, he explains how to do all that stuff. And, oh, which book is that? Who? Okay. Well, that book, too. Bug that guy if you need to know more book names, I guess. Oh, and also, actually, Certicom's website has a really nice little informative manual. And if you've never gone to RSA Laboratories' little crypto FAQ thing, there's a lot of good information there if you're starting out, or even if you're not starting out. There's still a lot of good stuff there. It's pretty comprehensive. So, any other questions? All right. Rock on. Have fun.